Welcome to the Wolf of Young Street podcast. This week, I've got a special guest in the house, Dr. Carolina Valente. Woo-hoo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Valente is the fearless leader of a brave new company known as Voxel Bioinnovations. And today, I'm really excited for you guys to hear some of the exciting work they're doing over there. Welcome to the show, Carolina.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, for sure. So just to start with, for those people who haven't heard the name Voxel Bioinnovations, they're just they want to know what your company does.
Absolutely. So Voxel is using bioprinting technology, so very similar to 3D printing, to create what I like to call as artificial human tissues. So the idea is quite simple. It's actually to be able to create artificial tissues that pharmaceutical companies can test drugs, and before testing those drugs in animal models and in people. So the idea is to almost kind of de-risk the drug development process.
Oh yeah, no, that's mm-hmm. interesting. And so, I mean, I was just waiting for you to mention human tissue for me to go, because that's where I want to jump in, because it's like,
absolutely.
It's like, how does that work? How are you printing human tissue?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I like to call them as almost as artificial biopsy samples, right? So biopsy samples are a small piece of human tissue that we take from humans when we are doing some studies, but we are creating them artificially in the lab. So we have something that we call bio ink that is almost like a jello-like mixture that we put human cells in there, and we create this 3D structure. And Voxel, what makes Voxel quite special is that we spend a lot of time really increasing the resolution of our printer to be able to also create artificial blood vessels. So our samples actually have artificial blood vessels, and they are made out of this jello-like material that really resembles human tissue, and also real cancer cells. So because we are really focused on cancer samples right now. And we do this all in-house, all in Victoria, and using our bioprinter.
So the moment you mentioned printing, in my head, I'm thinking, obviously, I'm a scientist, so I know better. But, you know, the moment you mention printing to a person, they're thinking paper, they're thinking printer, they're thinking token. But, you know, what is that printing of human tissue?
Yeah, it's. I think if we do the analogy with the printing paper, just because it's an easy example to understand, the cartridge that you have for the ink, it's what I call that jello-like material that is mixed with our cells. And imagine printing the same thing in the same page of paper multiple times, right? Mm. So you're kind of building up layer by layer in that paper. And it's exactly how we do in bioprinting. It's just the material is a biomaterial, but the idea is very similar. We are printing layer by layer until we have, in the end, a 3D structure. So the principle is pretty much the same.
Right. So I'm thinking Frankenstein here. So are you guys just out here printing body parts? Is that what's going on?
It's interesting because people always ask me, can you make me more muscles or can you make me this and that? And
then, yeah, I'm trying to get big here. I'm trying to get big.
So it's a great question. So so to give you an idea of the resolution that we have, our resolution is half of a micron. So what that means, it's a thickness of one hair, it's 100 microns. So we are 200 times smaller than that. Right. So what that means is we can create very complex structures, but we cannot create big structures. So we cannot print people full muscles, but we can print a tiny piece of muscle that we can do enough studies on it. And that's the beauty of Voxel, because the resolution is what allows us to mimic capillary vessels. That is our tiny, tiny vessels inside of the body, which they are crucial for delivery of drugs to specific disease areas. So right now, as I mentioned, our focus is cancer. So our main tissues that we are printing are breast cancer tissues.
Yeah. So, and that's really where I want to go next, because
absolutely.
You've mentioned, and I want you to kind of dial into what is the advantage, and to be more specific, like, why do you want to test future drugs on 3D bioprinted material?
Yes, that's a great question. So the main problem with cancer is the drugs, they don't reach the cancer area very well. And that's because of the vasculature plays a big role at that moment in which the that area is all compromised at that point when we have cancer, right? So we have a lot of more cells in an area that is not supposed to have that many cells. So the vasculature becomes quite disorganized. But we are still delivering drugs intravenously, which means through the vasculature. So what Voxel is focusing is really on the creation of that disorganized vasculature to study how the drug goes through the tissue and into the cancer area. So that's our major advantage. It's really, we are trying to mimic that physiology of the cancer environment, what we call the cancer microenvironment, that is a complexity. So the idea is that pharmaceutical companies will inject the drugs into the vasculature of our tissues, very similar if they were injecting someone's arm, for example, and study how that drug goes through the tissue. The main point right now is the drug development process is very expensive. It costs more than $2 billion. It's very time consuming, so it takes about 15 years. But on top of that, the failure rate is 95%. So what we are here to do is to help pharmaceutical companies to fail sooner. We want to be able to say that that specific drug is not going to work. But we want to be able to tell them sooner rather than later. So we are not investing as much time and money. And then in the end goal is also getting these therapies to the market sooner, but also making them more affordable. That's also a main point in here.
Yeah. So, I mean, my understanding, just to paraphrase what you said here is, you know, the way drugs would typically be developed is one where you go from, you know, you synthesize a certain material, you think it's active for dealing with certain diseases. And so you test it, you go through a test tube, bunch of tests for a while. And then once you get promising results, you then move to, sometimes they would do animal trials. Exactly. And then before you get to humans. And a lot of times, my understanding of what you're saying is a lot of times, you know, these drugs are going to fail. You know, having gone through all these years of trials in different stages.
Yep.
So where you're coming in as a company, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is you're trying to provide these human-like tissue, which if we're able to test a lot sooner, then we can kind of we can determine which drugs are viable for to proceed in the process. So, I mean, what I need to clarify is all these tests, it's not like, obviously you guys are not at the complexity of being able to 3D print a heart yet, right? In order do a certain test on your the complexity you're on is like more, you know, small localized tissue. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you select, for example, for a type of cell, for like, say you're trying to, I don't know, treat prostate cancer as against like breast cancer, like how do you select for the type of cells that go into these different 3D printing processes?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So the way that we work right now, let's say going back to the breast cancer example, there are specific cell lines that are specific for different treatments. So, for example, there are certain cell lines that they don't have some certain receptors at the surface, which means that they won't work for hormonal therapy. But there are certain cell lines that will only work for hormonal therapies. So Voxel uses a different types of cell lines depending on what type of treatment we are focusing on. So right now, in the terms of breast cancer, we have a cell line specific for chemotherapy drugs. We have a cell line specific for hormonal therapy drugs. And we have a cell line specific for radiation therapy. So depending on what type of treatment you are focusing on, you are choosing that specific cell line. And of course, the future And the more this company evolves, our idea is to get to a point where we are going towards personalized medicine, which means that I'm no longer using these cell lines that we buy. We are using cell lines from patients, right? So patient-derived cell lines, because then we are taking even closer to the reality, right? The challenge with patient-derived cell lines is they're very heterogeneous. So it's not a very good representation of that specific population. That's where immortalized cell lines coming from. But that's how we select the cell lines, depending on what type of therapy we are trying to screen in the platform.
Right. And what is the challenge, the big challenge in, because it's, what you're saying to me sounds amazing. Why is this?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's really mind blowing that you can kind of champion the like more targeted drug testing like that. And I'm curious what challenges companies like yours face.
I think the major challenge that Voxel faces is the introduction of a new methodology, right? As you described it quite well, the way that the drug development process works right now is they test those drugs in cell monolayers. So they put cells in a petri dish, they test the drugs, then they select the best ones, and then they go to animal models, right? So Voxel is introducing something in between the cell monolayers and between the animal models, the technology sitting there, which means there is a new methodology. So there is some education that has to happen around. The way that we are aiming to do this education is showing how our data looks like, right? Showing strong data. And what we are doing right now is we are using drugs that are already approved in the market. And we are showing that by screening those drugs in our tissue, we have similar results to human clinical trial data. That's what we are doing. And our next step, which is going to happen later these years, is we want to use drugs that have actually failed in humans due to efficacy. And we want to show that in our platform that failure would come earlier. So that's really our selling point. But the major challenge is that education around it, which we are trying to do by having that very, very strong data. And of course, working with pharmaceutical companies as partners to endorse the technology. What I think is changing is the whole environment around the drug development is changing. And that's something that I think is important to comment, because animal models have been exhaustively used for a very long time without having much promise. Like the correlation between animal and human is less than 8% translation. So which means that we are using animals and we are killing them, but we are not getting any better data with that either. So so a bill was approved and was signed under the Biden administration in 2022, and it's called the FDA Modernization Act. That is, the FDA is looking for alternatives to animal models. And for the first time in that bill, they said one of the alternatives could be bioprinted tissue models, which almost made this area explode. So it has never been a better moment to be working in what we are doing at Voxel.
Interesting. So I don't know, you just knew I was going to ask you this question, but how far away are we from being able to print human organs? And you know,
that's a great question.
What I really want to know is if I need a bionic arm and I want to become I don't know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, can I do it?
Yeah,
that's what I really want to know.
I think the reality is bioprinting was born in 2003, more or less around that time, right after 3D printing. And the promise when this field was created, so more than 20 years ago, it was to do exactly what you're saying. Can we decrease the organ transplant, like the lack of organ transplant that we have, the shortage for organ transplant? Can we make it better by 3D printing people their own organs, right? And I think the reality right now is we are not there yet. And the reason why we are not there yet is I strongly believe that there is no bioprinting technology yet that can do the whole thing. So a good example is that there is a lot of bioprinters on the market that can create large tissues. So they can 3D print very large constructs, very large scaffolds, but they can't make blood vessels. And then comes Voxel that can make very, very tiny structures, but we can't make it big, right? Because it takes time. it's thinking about pixels. It takes time. So I really think the future for this field, to get to a point where we are really creating fully functional organs, is the combination of multi-techniques. So really merging different types of bioprinters together to be able to create big constructs, but we also with very fine details. So I think we are still a little bit far from that, but we are much closer than we have ever been. That's the reality.
Interesting. And obviously you're in a in an interesting industry, and I'm curious, what do you see coming in the pipeline that, I mean, sort of like something to rival AI, you know?
I was just gonna say we actually like AI. And the reason why we like AI is we call them, like, the tissues that we are creating, they're called in vitro platforms because they are could be used in the lab. AI platforms to screen drugs that are called in silico. And the reason why we like them is I think there's a lot of power in AI in simulating molecules like we have never been able to do before. However, no one's going to take that simulation and then plug directly in people. That's the reality, right? So we see AI companies, in silico companies, almost as a partnership to Voxel, right? A way to screen and select the breast molecules, but those still need to be tested somewhere. So that's where we come in, before we go to animal models, before we go to people especially, right? So we actually like the AI area, and I think there is a lot of advancement that has been doing, and they have been doing a lot of good in the drug development process. So I think the future looks like using, as I said, different types of techniques to solve different problems in the drug development process, because we are trying to solve something in the beginning, but there is also a lot of problems in clinical trials and so on. So the combination of different people trying to solve different areas of the drug development process, I think this will advance considerably. And AI is definitely trying to help with the beginning of that process to streamline considerably.
Interesting. So, mm-hmm. I'm gonna kind of step back a little bit,
obviously. Absolutely.
And here I wanna understand a bit more about. Obviously, you've come a long way from a lab in the basement of a building in the University of Victoria to where you are right now. And I'd like to hear that story. I'd like my audience to hear that story. Going from there to this beautiful company that you have right now.
Thank you. So we met when I was still a PhD student, and that was right. I was at the basement of one of the chemistry buildings at the University of Victoria. And I think the reality is the idea for Voxel came during my PhD, but I didn't execute it much because, I mean, the goal was to finish the PhD, as it is if any grad student that just wants to finish. So once I defended my thesis, I incorporated the company a week after. And I had this idea for Voxel for some time. And I remember one of my best friends, his father, was the one telling me, "Kara, if you're going to do this, like, you have to make a decision. You can't just be talking about it. You have to do something." And I decided to incorporate the company a week after I defended my PhD thesis. And of course, I didn't do this alone, right? I had the idea, but I have an amazing group of people that are making whatever was in my mind a reality. And that's the thing here. You can have as many as a great idea, but the execution is as important as the idea itself. So I have an amazing group of people that is actually executing. I haven't stepped in the lab in 3 years, so I only run the business right now. But yeah. I think a lot of times grad students don't see entrepreneurship as one of the paths. We see a lot of, industry or academia, which I also ended up going to academia because I'm an assistant teaching professor at UVic too. But entrepreneurship is a very viable path. And we learn a lot of those skills to be an entrepreneur. When you are a grad student, I really believe that my time management skills, my ability to be creative, a lot of that came from my PhD, and I learned that in there. So that was the path that took me to creating Voxel. And to be quite honest, it was a tough decision to make because at that point I had postdoc offers from Washington University, the Mayo Clinic, and also Stanford. And I had to make a decision of rejecting all of them to stay in Canada and start this company without any money, any prospect of investment, anything at all besides a good idea and a group of people that wanted to do that with me. So I think that was a tough decision to make. But yeah, so Canada is home right now, and this company is a big part of my life.
Have you always, like, that takes a lot of guts and a lot of bravery to to just up and be like, you know what, I'm gonna, like, did you always want to be an entrepreneur, just to start from there?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. A lot of people ask me that, and the answer is I never even thought about that. So my dad is an engineer, but he's also an entrepreneur. So he has a couple of stores in Brazil. But it was never like, oh, I want to be just like my dad. It was just something that came out of, okay, this is a good idea, and someone has to do it. Mm-hmm. And someone has to take the CEO role. And at that point, it was me. So I think a lot of the business side, I learned as I went, as I created this company. And as I received a lot of no's from investors, we just got better and better and better as we went. So there was never a path that was clear in my mind, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm a very driven person, so I think that helps. But it was just like rinse and repeat, do it again. And I think the PhD also teaches that. It teaches how to deal with failure quite a lot. That was something that I learned from grad school. Experiments not working, you just rinse and repeat, and you get better. So I think that has been part of the journey as an entrepreneur too.
Right. So you kind of hinted at your origins in Brazil there. And maybe we can go back there. What were you like, you know, I assume you grew up in Brazil?
Grew up in Brazil and stayed in Brazil until I was around 20 years old. So did my undergrad in Brazil. I started my undergrad quite early. I was 16 when I started my undergrad in chemical engineering in Rio. And then moved to Portugal to do a master's degree in chemical and biomedical engineering. And that was my first contact with the biomedical field. And that's what made me fall in love, was during that master's program. And I was actually building better membranes to oxygenate blood. So there are something called ECMO machines, that are those machines where people get plugged when they are having heart surgery or lung surgery, and they don't have the ability to oxygenate their blood anymore. So inside of those machines, what you have is membranes that are permeable to oxygen. And I was designing better membranes to make it even more easily to oxygenate the blood. So that was my first contact with the medical field. And then when I was in Portugal, a professor from UVic actually gave a talk there, believe it or not. So, and I was like, Canada, that sounds great. So I applied all over Canada, chose UVic. Thank God, didn't know much about weather, but chose UVic because it was a small university, and I knew if it was smaller, I would be able to make a bigger impact. So that was a big decision for me. And then came here to UVic and did my PhD in biomedical engineering, which is under the mechanical engineering department at UVic. But the passion for cancer came from seeing my mom struggle with cancer a lot during her lifetime, and even very recently again. So that's where the passion for cancer came. So when we started Voxel, and the decision was what cancer, it was breast cancer was the main one. And that was also my PhD, was also quite focused in breast cancer for that specific reason. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry to hear about your mom's struggle with cancer, by the way. And maybe it's worth delving into looking at the landscape of cancer treatments at the moment. what, obviously you hear of new therapies coming along every day.
Yeah.
I'm curious what your opinions of some of the latest therapies in cancer treatments is, mm-hmm. and perhaps where you see the future of cancer treatment in the near future or in the distant future.
I think there's a lot of new technologies coming up. You're right. So we think about radiotherapy enhancers is a promising field. The CAR T cell therapy is a promising field. I think the most promising field that is coming up is the immunotherapy field, which is something that Voxel wants to go towards in the future with these issues. But that's, I believe it's the most promising field. The challenge with the cancer treatment right now, is the fact that cancer behaves differently in different people, even though it's the same type of cancer. So even if a therapy is quite effective in someone, it may not be effective in someone else. Mm-hmm. I think that's the crucial part in here, and why I believe the immunotherapy space is definitely growing and going towards the right direction. So Voxel's tissues is still focused for on the small molecule space, so chemotherapy, hormonal therapy as a starting point, because we got to start from somewhere. But the idea is to get to a point in which we are developing the immune system in these tissues, and we are working with immunotherapy, which, for example, the BC Cancer Agency here in Victoria, they do it quite well. So there is potential partners, potential local partners that we can have to work on the development of these tissues with us.
Right. Okay. I guess some of the other things I'm curious about is, you know, more and more there's cancers of basically every single part of the human body, right? Mm-hmm. And you spoke about immunotherapy being a prospectively, you know, interesting direction to take cancer treatments.
Yeah.
Some people talk about, you know, to avoid things like lung cancer, you can stop smoking, you know, or stop drinking alcohol to kind of decrease the risk of liver cancer, or, you know, get immunized for HPV to avoid cervical cancer, stuff like that. Are there behavioral modifications that people can do to avoid or decrease their risk of cancer?
I mean, there is a lot of ideas that the environment, as you said, plays an effect on it. But the reality is genetics play too. Mm-hmm. And we don't certainly know to a certain extent that genetics versus the environment, what is actually the effect. So, of course, as you mentioned, there are basic things that we can do, not smoke and things like that. But for cancers like breast cancer, genetics plays a big role on that. So I think about cancer not as much as how can we avoid, but how can we prevent from spreading too much. So if there is any history in the family, I would be more cautious to get tested and to keep an eye more frequently for the development of that cancer. But at this point, it's uncertain to say what could we do to officially decrease. We know that physical activity helps, because it keeps your cells alive and it keeps your cells renovating and things like that. But that it's uncertain what can we do to avoid getting there because of the genetic aspect.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So where I really want to delve into next is terms of let's see. So, and where do you see Voxel in the next 5 to 10 years?
That's a great question. So 5 to 10 years, as I mentioned, let's go with five first. Five is really the immunotherapy space. We want to get to the area. We want to make an impact in there. But the reality is 10 years from now, we are talking about 2034, which sounds scary, but we want to be the platform for drug screening. We want to be part of something big. We want to be able to make an impact, not just in cancer, but different diseases too. And we want to be that platform that will be adopted by pharmaceutical companies and contract research organizations as the best platform before we go into animal models or even before we go directly to humans. So that's the reality for Voxel. And we want to get to that point too, in which we are merging with companies out there that are also making a difference and want to make a difference in other aspects of the drug development process. So that's the vision for the company for the next 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll bring it back to your team, because as you mentioned, yeah. there's a lot of people. Absolutely. There's a lot of people that were willing to work on this crazy dream of yours, and you know, there's a lot of people there sacrificing every day to make this dream a reality. And I'm curious what your team is like, and what kind of as a startup, what kind of expertise have you kind of put together?
Working for a startup is hard. That's the reality, right? We don't have, our budgets are all very constrained. We don't have a lot of money, and we require a lot of dedication, a lot of hours to make things work. So I think the people that work for a startup, and I can speak for my people for sure, these are people that believe in the mission. So it's not just the role that they are doing. They believe in the mission of the company, that is really to get therapies to the hands of people sooner, and to make them more affordable. So those are people that bought into the mission and believe that that's what we should be doing. The team is fantastic, and it's a very interdisciplinary group of people. I think that's something that it's very, very important. So our engineers are capable to also doing chemistry. Our chemists are also capable of doing engineering. So it's a very interdisciplinary group of people. For example, our VP of business development is Kevin Voss, and his background's in chemistry.
I know that so, guy.
yes, exactly. So we, I have always decided that I would hire people for what they are good at and not for their background. So one of our business coordinators, Aziz Carr, her background is mechanical engineering, and she's fantastic at business. So I started working with this young group of people that were very, very, very hardworking and really believed in the mission. And I started seeing what they shine. And I started putting them in the correct roles. So being a professor at UVic also helped me to handpick some of them. So a lot of them have been my students in the past, and I was able to handpick some of them. And I think that's a very interdisciplinary group of people. And they are the reason why Voxel is here where we are, is their hard work, is their dedication.
Yeah, no, for sure. We've said all of this, and we haven't even touched the part where you're a professor at UVic. Where do you find the time, Carolina?
I mean, again, grad school has taught me very good time management skills. I'm very grateful to be able to do two jobs at the same time. I do work hard, and I work effectively. So I think that's the way to do it. I know right now, especially after doing this company for 3.5 years, I know where my time is well spent off. And those are with, for example, investor meetings, writing some grants and things like that. So I have learned it in a hard way. I have learned to delegate tasks, to ask for help. I love the teaching side at my job at UVic. So inspiring future engineers is something that I was also born to do. So I also love that teaching aspect of my professional career. So it is all about time management, and it's all about prioritizing. Yeah.
Right. So I think I want to hear more about like the startup landscape, and you know, you went from having this idea. Obviously, there's money needed in order to hire people to fund the path, essentially. And I wonder about what the landscape is for a person starting a company, in Canada as you've done it, for just going for. I mean, how many people are employed on the Voxel right now?
Right now we are 14.
14? Okay.
Yes, 1-4. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, to go from 1 to 14 is quite a jump. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm curious about how that kind of played out.
Yeah. And I think the beauty about Canada, and that's what really got us through the first 6 months, it's grants. There's a lot of grants for small companies in here. There's a lot of grants for new hires in small companies. So there's a lot of incentives from the government. And that's what got us through the first 6 months. The challenge was a lot of these grants, they work by reimbursement, which means that you pay the employee first and then they pay you back, which means that we always had to have a month ahead of time of money to be able to pay people. So I put all my savings at that point that when I started the company, which wasn't much, was about 20,000, and other people put a little bit of money, and that's how we cared to have enough for the first month to pay people and then continue receiving those reimbursements. And then after that, what we did is we did what we call a family and friends round. That is, you go to your family and friends and you ask for money in exchange, of course, for stock in the company, for shares. And I remember until today, and that was like more than around 3 years ago, and I remember until today sitting on the floor of my living room and then thinking, oh my God, someone just wrote me a $15,000 check. Wow. And that was a friend, a very dear friend from UVic, and I was freaking out at that point because I was thinking someone is giving me $15,000 of their hard work money because they believe in this company. So we did a small family and friends. We raised close to $100,000. And that continued getting us more grants and allowing us to continue going further. And then at that point, in the end of 2021, that's when we decided we needed real money coming in. And then, so end of 2021, so after a year of operations, a year and a little bit of operations, I decided to open our first fundraising round that was really from investors, mostly angels at that point. And very quickly, we got our lead investor, that is someone that gives the first money coming in, set the terms for the round. And that was too good to be true. That was too easy. And then so once I started reading the paperwork, I saw that something sketchy was going on in there. And I remember until today, that was December 31st, 2021, when I rejected a $200,000 check, knowing that I only had one more month to pay people. I did not have anything else. I did not have any more money. But I knew that if I got mixed, if the company got mixed with the wrong type of investor, that would not just compromise at that moment, but would compromise our entire future of raising money. Wow. So December 31st, I said no to a $200,000 check when there was no other money. There was no other money coming in.
Oh, that's
and then
wild.
mid-January, we got a new lead investor. Wow. And we got the money coming in with less than 2 weeks of running out of money completely. And then that year of 2022, so that's when we officially raised our first round, and we were supposed to raise 1.5 million, and we ended up getting oversubscribed considerably, and ended up raising 2.3 million in that year. And then from there on, you just get better. You get better at writing grants. You get better at asking money for people. And you start getting larger checks. So we are now closing an additional 1.5 million, and hoping that in 2025 we are going to raise our Series A, which is our big check size of a couple of millions in that round. Yeah. But you hear a lot of no's before you hear the yes. And then that's the good thing. I learned something. They said you first talk to the investors that you are not really sure about before you talk to the ones that you really want the money from, because you use the first ones almost as a practice.
Yeah.
Until you get very, very good. And then you go and talk to the ones that you want to get money from.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So as we sort of round up here, I just had a few questions.
Absolutely. You know.
So this is the fun round, Carolina. So
okay.
Warm up yourself.
Let's do it.
I thought I'd ask, can you share maybe, you know, a surprising story about something that happened, I don't know, behind the scenes at Voxel? Something fun.
We went to a TV show, and once we are allowed to say, I will say, but it's not yet, but we went to the US to record a TV show, and we ended up getting some money on that TV show, which we were not expecting. So that was something fun that happened to Voxel, yes.
Wow.
Hey.
Wow. Hey. just out here picking up money everywhere, girl. You know, what's going on?
Hey. Yeah.
Yeah. So I also wanted to know, what's the most unconventional and unexpected leadership lesson that you learned since starting Voxel?
That is a fantastic question. And everyone teaches us to know science well, but no one teaches us how to deal with people. We don't learn that. So I think one of the hardest lessons that I learned as a leader of this organization is that one size does not fit all. People have different personalities, people have different behaviors, which means that the interaction has to be tuned to be able to work with that person efficiently. So I think that's something that learning how to interact with people and learning how to be a better leader, not a better boss, but how to be a better leader, is something that is constantly in my mind. I'm always reading books about it. And it was something that I didn't think was going to be my focus when I started this off. I really thought that my focus was going to be all in the science and raising money, but building people with me, it's one of the priorities of Voxel, that is building professionals for life. So that is something that I keep in mind for sure.
Yeah. And obviously your journey has sounded like a fairy tale. So.
Oh, it wasn't.
No, I'm sure. But if your journey and Voxel's journey could be made into a movie, what would be the title of that movie?
You fake it until you make it, and then eventually you become. So I think that's basically what Voxel was. In the beginning, we weren't sure. We had a good idea. And we were talking to people like, we were sure, and now we are sure, because we had become. And we are very close to really, really becoming. So I think you fake it until you make it, and then eventually you will become.
For sure. Anyways. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today, Carolina.
Absolutely.
You've given me a lot of great information, and I'm excited to see where your company goes. And I hope that, you know, you guys are at the forefront of cancer treatments in the next few years. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. My pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for joining the podcast this week, and see you next time. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wolf of Yonge Street podcast. If you derive value from this podcast, please don't forget to subscribe. I would love to hear from you as well. So please comment your thoughts down below.